is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The banks. These last weeks, the doubts about the banks are commonplace on the front pages of the financial news. Looking at the banking crisis from the point of view of how did we get into this fix, I welcome Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes political economics column. He's based in London. This is a global mystery, however, how the banks became a problem. We give the money to the banks. The banks pay us interest rate, not very much these last years, but they do. The banks also make it very easy to pass on money to the next generation. What else do the banks do? Apparently, they invest that money. But recently, banks have been so carefully patrolled by regulators, both in the United States and in Europe, I learned from the My Financial Times and My Wall Street Journal, that the concern for bank returns has been augmented by a concern for bank returns from non-banks. That's right, non-bank returns. Joe, a very good evening to you. What is a non-bank, and how did this come about that banks are now being augmented by non-banks, and therein lies a problem? Good evening to you.
Hey, John. Well, so I think the best way to understand this is to take a step back and think about what a bank does traditionally, and that is that they are a financial intermediary. The purpose is to be a big machine for transferring capital from people who have extra capital lying around in the form of savings, and then sort of distributing that in the form of loans or investments to people who can use that spare capital profitably, but don't have enough capital for themselves. And so traditionally, that intermediation function between the savers of capital and the people who can use it was performed by banks. But what we've seen over the past few decades, and particularly since the 2008 global financial crisis, has been a huge expansion in the number of non-bank financial intermediaries. And so these are institutions that in various ways perform that key function of channeling people's savings into productive investment in the forms of loans or the like. But they aren't banks. They're not called banks. They aren't organized as banks. They don't function in key ways in the way that banks do. So what are some examples of these? Large pension funds or financial intermediaries that aren't banks. Insurance companies or financial intermediaries that aren't banks. Money market funds, hedge funds, all, and plenty of others, all perform that key role of transmitting capital from people who have it to people who need it. And so this creates a real problem because, of course, one of the reasons that we were always so anxiety-ridden about banking regulation is because the health of your financial intermediary is directly related to the health of your underlying economy. If something breaks down with that intermediation process, people who need capital for business investment or for a mortgage or for an auto loan aren't able to get it. And because there's also often a lot of leverage or borrowing involved in this intermediation process, it can sort of, you know, a problem can very quickly start spiraling out of control. And the difficulty is that there isn't really a good or plausible way to regulate a lot of these non-bank institutions in the way that we have regulated banks over the years. And so you end up in a situation where a growing proportion of the financial system is involved with these institutions that are not regulated like banks, that probably can't be regulated like banks, but that do face a lot of financial risks, particularly if interest rates rise as rapidly as we've seen over the past year.
I think you've reported that the non-banks went from 40% of everything to 50%. Did I read that correctly? What triggered that? Why did that happen suddenly?
Yes, I mean, this is a global phenomenon, and the number you're pointing to there comes from a recent International Monetary Fund study on this issue, and they found that at around the time of the 2008 financial crisis, 40% of global financial assets were held by non-bank intermediaries. That number has now increased to 50% of the world's financial assets are now in some way connected to these non-bank intermediaries. And a lot of the reason for that actually has to do with banking regulation. What happened after 2008, because there had been a big element of a banking panic in that episode, there were much tighter regulations imposed on banks. It became much more expensive for them to do business. They were much more tightly constrained in terms of the sorts of activities that they could engage in, the riskiness of the loans that they could make. But if you're going to impose that regulation on one part of your financial system, even while you're going to have unprecedentedly low interest rates and all of the quantitative easing that we've done for a decade, the risks are going to go somewhere else. And that seems to account for this marked increase in non-bank intermediation over the past decade. It's because at the same time that you were making it harder and harder for the banks to do business in the traditional way, you were still creating all of these incentives through your economic policies, your monetary policies, for people somewhere in the economy to take more risks. And the people who did that were the non-banks.
What can go wrong and why? This one was a whopper, Joe. Surprised me when in the political environment of Boris Johnson out, Liz Truss in, Liz Truss out, Rishi Sunak in, there was fire sale in a non-bank called the British Pension Fund. How did that happen?
Well, yes, this is a perfect example of the sort of risks that we're going to face, and a good example for several reasons. So first off, when Britain experienced financial turmoil in September and October last year, it wasn't a banking crisis. The traditional chartered banks were perfectly healthy, were able to carry on business. There wasn't a run on any banks, nothing of the kind. Instead, it was all of the pension funds in the UK that started to run into trouble, because you had this cohort of non-bank financial intermediaries. So first off, they had accumulated huge risks on their balance sheets throughout the ultra-low interest rate period, just by nature of being pension funds and the way pensions have to manage their assets and liabilities and the influence of interest rates on that process. And then they also had all, as a consequence, crowded into the market for UK government debt, or gilts, as British government bonds are called. And so that meant that you had this group of financial institutions that were not banks, but were highly leveraged financial intermediaries, who were all crowded into exactly the same kind of asset. And so once that asset started experiencing some market wobbles, it created this fire selling dynamic that was actually very destabilizing for the financial markets in the UK in general. So that's a perfect example of how you can end up with a panic that's a non-bank panic. It wasn't a bank panic. It was a panic among one of these other forms of institution.
Is there a regulator anywhere who would have spotted that, Joe? Because we talk about regulation failure here. We're about to, because of the SVB. But in Britain, in the debrief of that crisis, was there someone blamed, or it was just a system and we have to live with it?
Well, I mean, it is true that in the case of pension funds, and also often in the case of insurance companies, there are regulators who will impose various form of regulatory requirement on them, although I think that it's not always easy for those regulators to understand what the precise risks are. And the other thing that you have to keep in mind is that, okay, if we were going to go down the road of imposing tighter and tighter regulation on pension funds or mutual funds or money market funds or insurers or any of the rest of it, the risk is just going to go somewhere else, in exactly the same way that we've managed to shift more of these risks out of the banks and into the non-banking sector. I think that what you need is a totally different approach to financial regulation. We need to understand that normal interest rates, rather than the ultra-low ahistorical rates that we've had over the past decade, are actually a form of financial regulation. We need to understand that the market discipline that you get if you have a normal interest rate regime is a vital component of keeping all of this in check, precisely because you're never going to be able to regulate specific financial companies well enough to avoid risk after the fact. You have to avoid risk before the fact by not creating the interest rate policies that encourage risk taking in the first place.
Another example, and this is tricky because it involves a bank, Silicon Valley Bank. Silicon Valley Bank experienced a run on its deposits, which were enormous theretofore. And the run was not unlike venture capital funds deciding that the bank is not trustworthy, we better get out now. Was Silicon Valley Bank functioning like a bank or a VC fund? And is a VC fund a non-bank?
Well, see, this is an interesting example of the interaction that you can run into between non-banks and banks, because the venture capital funds are a form of non-bank intermediary. They do that kind of getting capital from people to have it, who have it, to the people who need it function. They are not themselves banks. But what we discovered with Silicon Valley Bank is that the interaction between the non-banks, the venture capital funds, and the bank, Silicon Valley Bank, actually created this cycle where the venture capital funds contributed to the run on Silicon Valley Bank. And that's not unusual. Something similar sort of happened with Credit Suisse, because they had been involved in many management scandals in recent years, most of which boiled down to poor risk management controls in Credit Suisse's relationship with non-bank intermediaries like hedge funds and other non-bank financial institutions. And those scandals then contributed to a loss of confidence on the part of Credit Suisse's depositors. So that was a little less direct than what happened with Silicon Valley Bank, but it's an example of how they are all living in the same ecosystem and capable of influencing each other in very unpredictable ways.
So we've discovered what is beyond the reach of Dodd-Frank, and that means that until and if we have a full understanding of the risk, this will happen again, Joe?
Pretty much. I mean, the whole conceit of Dodd-Frank and also the Basel capital rules on a global scale done through the Bank for International Settlements, the big conceit there was that as long as you regulate the things that call themselves banks, you can have a safe financial system. And I think that we're discovering that you have to have a much more holistic view. It doesn't matter whether the institution is a chartered bank or whether it's a pension fund or whether it's a life insurer. What matters is the kind of risks that they are incentivized to take. And if the broader economic policy environment is wrong, you will always end up encouraging someone to take very dangerous risks that will pose a danger to financial stability.
One detail. Years ago, when you were in Hong Kong, we discussed at some point that this is in the boom years for the People's Republic of China. At some point, certain enterprises were warehousing, my memory is, plates of copper in a large parking lot, is how I imagined it. Was that a non-bank?
Well, I think that certainly a characteristic of China's economy has always been a blurring of these lines between the banking system and the non-banking system. And you could often have situations where companies that weren't really financial companies at all might still find themselves sort of using capital that they had absorbed from investors to just invest in commodities that they would leave sitting around waiting for the price to go up. And so that is an example of the regulatory problem that you run into, because there is a sense in which that's a financial intermediation activity. But if you're just trying to regulate particular kinds of non-bank institution, you will never capture that kind of risk. The only way you can address that is by making sure that you have appropriate incentives with the appropriate interest rates at the beginning of the process before you even get to that point.
We're going to London because the United Kingdom is going through a bad patch, week after week of strikes. And this particular strike looks damaging to everyone, but at the same time calls into question an attachment to an instrument of the 20th century that perhaps has seen its shelf date expire. That means the National Health Service. Joe Sternberg, Wall Street Journal in London. I'm John Batchelor.